welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 479. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me today, for the final time, is Rick Cowley.
Hello! And also, no!
Also, bye! And whoop! We'll get into that in a little bit. Joining us again, you met him last week, he's back again this week, it's Matt.
Hello! How are we all doing?
Okay. We're about to enter another period of mourning, unfortunately. Well, we are. You're going to enter a period of, like, temporary holiday, which is quite nice, I hear. So, we lost M from the podcast not so long ago, and now it seems that Rick is bounding off into the sunset. If you love him, you got to let him go. And if you're fairly ambivalent, you let him go as well, as it turns out. So, see ya.
Thanks.
What
a nice way of putting it.
Of course. So, what? Why? Don't leave us, Rick.
But the time is right for me to move on and find my way in this world.
Okay.
You know, Pocket Gamer has been my life. It was the first job I ever really had.
That's true, isn't it? Yeah.
At Biz. And now it's time for me to go out there and see what else I can do and just explore the world and, you know, all that sort of nonsense.
Wowzers. Yeah, I suppose I came to this after having some other jobs and then went, ah, yes, video editing, this is the thing. Whereas you started with this out the gate, didn't you?
And yeah.
And also, it's a lot to do, being as you know, editing the entire site and whatnot. I imagine, or I don't have to imagine, I've seen it. It's a lot going on. Behind the scenes, and I know games journalists get a lot of stick, and people think everyone's corrupt, and we're all apparently minted, despite the fact they're all appallingly poor, which is weird, considering we're getting all these backhands, apparently. I read about all this amazing money that we're getting from all these developers paying us to give their games good reviews. I never see any of that money. It's really strange. Have you ever seen any, Rick?
No money.
No.
Just nice free stuff. But that's just what you get in every industry, right?
It's not, yeah. And even then, it's like a free game. Yeah, great. Now you have to play it to completion, even if you don't like it, to review it.
A free Funko Pop. Awesome. I'll throw that on the fire. Thanks.
Depends what industry you work in as well, because you don't always want free stuff, depending where you work, I imagine.
No, well, it's mostly plastic tat. Once you get to the first event and people are saying, hey, here's a little bag of stuff, which is what, you know, when you attend these events sometimes, if they're very big, if you're this big EA thing for one of their new releases, you know, they do sort of quasi-goodie bags. And it's not anything you'd actually want. And even if it was, like, I feel quite uncomfortable about the whole thing anyway, so I always just ignore and refuse all that stuff. The only useful thing that people have to give you is codes for games, because we need to review these things. We need to be able to get access. And that's it. And even in some cases, that scene is like a perk. And it's like, it's not a perk. It's like, it's like if you turn up to work at a writing office and like, okay, here we're going to give you a keyboard. Okay, think yourself lucky. And it's like, well, how else was I going to write the thing? Yeah, I'm a writer. I need the keyboard. It's not like a luxury item. I can't review this game unless you give it to me. So, it's all a little bit, I think, exaggerated. But I guess you're done with all of it. Washing your hands. Because you're not even going like to somewhere else within the industry. You're moving into a slightly different sector, aren't you?
Yes, I'm going to go do some PR for a bit.
Ooh.
Nothing to do with games whatsoever. It is data-driven marketing for various companies and clients around the world and all that sort of nonsense. It's going to be great. I won't have to talk about games anymore.
Unless you want to.
Yes. And I won't have to, like, rush out 5 reviews in a week anymore or anything daft like that. I can just pick and choose the games that I want to play, spend some actual time with them. It's going to be lovely. I'm really looking forward to it. I will miss, obviously, being on the podcast, and I will miss Pocket Gamer. It's been lovely. I've had a really great year as editor, and it's been great chatting to you, James, every week or so. But, you know, we've all got to grow up and move on at some point, and this is my time, I think.
Wow, that's inspiring. I'm leaving. Screw this podcast. Headphones off. Fuck you guys.
Think of all that free data that you're getting from the company.
Hell yeah.
The goodie bag's full of data.
Just USB sticks full of everybody's data.
How long you actually been with Pocket Gamer for?
If we're including my time as an intern, 4 years.
Well,
just about.
It's been a fair while.
I've had a good run.
I've got, I think, a year or so on you. It's always sad when these things switch around, and we had the same thing with them and when other people leave. But also, it's always good because people are going off to do things they want to do. And I think there is an element of, and we've seen this discussed online a little bit, and I don't want to put you off, Matt, being as you're relatively new, but there's this element of saying, if you make a job out of your hobby, you'll never work a day in your life. That attitude, which is like true to an extent, and that's why people want to work doing something they love. But there is another angle of that, which is if you make your hobby your job, it's no longer your hobby anymore, and you can't enjoy your hobby. And oh no, I used to like doing that, and now I hate it because I have to do it. So it can kind of go two ways.
So look forward to that one, Matt.
Yeah,
when you suddenly decide, oh wow, games are actually terrible and I hate everything.
I'll let you know in 3 years, shall I? Or is it 4 years? Yeah.
I think it takes about 6 months, to be honest, but...
Yes, we'll be sad to see you go, Rick. I'm going to ask you some of your favourite games, one or two of your favourite highlights over the course of the podcast. But before we get to any of that, we should discuss what we're going to be doing on this week's show. So we're going to be talking about the reappearance of Rolando. Think back to 2009, one of the first proper mobile games that got real critical attention. It's coming back. Following on from the PS4 story from last week about pushing games to your mobile, console games that is, Microsoft is showcasing its new Project X Cloud to get Xbox games onto your mobile, plus some news about Octopath Traveler, Champions of the Continent. And we've got a whole bunch of new releases, including the likes of Block Droppin' Blitz, Rose's Garden, Battlefleet, Ground Assault, Wonder Park Magic Rides, and more. First the news. Did anyone actually play Rolando in 2000 and I'm going to say 8, the first one came out? 8 or 9?
I don't think I had like a smartphone until 2013, so no.
That's fair. I'm in those early years, the very first, like, and I guess it would be the iPod Touch or something, like the original, or iPhone 3G was the first one where it was like the App Store actually appeared. And that would have been expensive because it would have been like the flagship thing. Matt, when were you on the scene when it came to mobile? When did you start taking a vague interest in, like, portable games?
Probably around the same time. I mean, portable games as a whole, I obviously grew up with Game Boy and then went into Nintendo DS and then obviously you just sort of transition into mobile, really. But No, I never tried Rolando.
Okay, well, this is one that I played in retrospect. So when I appeared here, it was like, I should probably have a go on some of the inverted commas classics before they get phased out by App Store updates and iOS updates that mean I can't play it anymore. And it was, if you've never played it, an accelerometer-based game in which you take control of a little rolling dude. And it's basically a platformer where you tilt the iPhone in order to roll your main character to an exit. Then you encounter his little buddies and you have to roll them as well. So it's like rolling into one of them and that will cause a certain amount of momentum. And then you can start rolling two or three or four up hills and down slopes and over gaps and into things that fire you off places and all of that. And it was legit good. It was one of the first games that really showed you that the accelerometer could be used in a way that wasn't complete crap. Because so often the accelerometer games, the controls are a bit woolly and rubbish. And I remember the early days of the driving games where it was like near impossible to control using accelerometer controls. But it's gotten much, much, much better than that. But this one pulled it off a full 10 years ago. Now, it's coming back with an anniversary edition. Rolando Royal Edition is the name of it. And they've turned it from like pure 2D to more of like a 2.5D look that you get with something like Little Big Planet. And it's a remake of the original game. I think they're doing some tweaks to it, though. I get the impression it's like they're changing some of the level structure and whatnot.
I don't know.
No?
I didn't look into it hard enough.
No, I don't know. I feel like it's getting some little tweaks and bits and pieces. But all we've got really at this point is a trailer, which you can obviously go over and see on PG. Actually, it looks quite nice. For me, the story about this is less that Rolando is coming out and more that... We're doing 10-year anniversary remasters of iOS games. What the hell?
God, yeah. I hadn't thought of it like that.
Like, I get this when it's, you know, the PS4 and they're bringing out the remasters of the old PS3 and PS2 games. But, like, this is how old this ecosystem is now. 10-year anniversary remaster editions of mobile games. Which, to me, is bonkers.
I guess 10 years into, like, gaming in general, you were hitting sort of the NES phase of things. Yeah, mobile gaming is kind of in that phase now. It's like the early days of when things started going really cool.
I guess it is in its infancy comparative to other styles of gaming, i.e. home console gaming, which now has been around for like 30 plus years. The interesting thing about this is this isn't the first time this has happened. Because I was thinking, like, is this the first remaster edition they've done of like a classic game or inverted commas classic game? But no, they did this with Nova. Do you remember Gameloft game? They released a kind of remastered version of that around the same time or just after the time that Halo did their remaster of Halo. And Nova is obviously very much a game that is inspired by Halo, to put it generously. And I think they were kind of doing the same thing. So this has happened before, but I don't think it was officially 10 years at that point. On the other hand, I don't know if you can even still get Rolando on the App Store. And to some degree, this solves an issue we have, which is games just vanishing from the App Store all the time because they're digital and the developers can't update them or don't want to update them to be compatible with new iOS versions. So this is a way to play old games that maybe have been lost to the annals of time.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing of like when you were saying about the Halo remasters, you know, you couldn't play Halo on a modern console and then they updated it. The only difference is we sort of think of it as being like iOS is just sort of an ever-expanding thing. It's not like they're releasing a new console every cycle. They just release a new phone every year. So it's kind of weird to think about it being a remaster of a game that, in theory, should work on your phone, because it's the same thing, basically. It's just been moved on a bit. So it is very odd that mobile gaming has to do that, I suppose.
Yeah. And also, for me, remasters are often so much to do with graphics. And it's like, to be honest, with mobile games, graphics in terms of fidelity, in terms of like pixel counting and stuff, how HD this is, and now it's in 4K, doesn't really matter as much. I don't feel like it does. Do you think that stuff benefits from this? Matt, have you played any old games where you've been like, well, you know, this is really in need of a 4K refresh on mobile?
Not for mobile, no. None's springing to mind, but it is interesting for this Rolando that it does say in the description, it's every interaction, every course, flower, trampoline, bomb, catapult, and squirrel has been given a thorough scrub. Buff and shine. So
so what you're saying is they've been buffing their squirrels.
Took the words out of my mouth, yes. But yeah, it's just interesting. They are clearly going for the graphical upgrade, but it will be interesting to see what the final product looks like.
Well, you can get a look at the trailer that's currently on PG if you want to have a peek. Moving on from that one, talking about getting games to look better on mobile, we discussed the PS4 remote play option last week. Now, Microsoft did have their own answer to this, and it was something that was actually talked about like last year. So Project xCloud, they made an announcement a while back, and basically the idea was, hey, we're going to be able to let you stream Xbox games onto your mobile phone. And this is much more in keeping with, we always talk about it, OnLive and PlayStation Now and all that stuff, where rather than streaming directly from your console and your console being the host, this is something where they're running the game on a whole bunch of servers somewhere else and you are just sucking it down the pipes and playing it on the go on your mobile. The difference, at least from a conceptual point of view here, is it seems to be immediately compatible with the Xbox controller. So you can have your mobile phone and the game is running on that, and it's basically a dumb screen, a display, but then you can just use your Xbox controller to control the game, which is a thing that, at the moment, that PS4 remote play doesn't let you do with the PS4 controller. You have to just play it with those horrible virtual on-screen buttons, and it's, like, nigh on impossible. In fact, you weren't here to talk about it last week, Rick, but you did have a go on some of the games on PS4 remote, didn't you?
God, it was a nightmare.
What did you try and play?
I fired up Red Dead Redemption 2, first of all, because that's kind of notorious for having a complex control system. And just, like, riding a horse and then trying to aim and all that kind of stuff is just, blah, it was horrible. And then I had a quick go on some fighting games because I figured there was a little bit of lag in like the inputs and stuff, and like Tekken and Street Fighter were both basically unplayable. You could not get out a decent combo just by doing it, so needs a bit of work.
Okay. Well, they showed a kind of trailer demo of it last year, which is obviously, you know, very rehearsed and it's filmed and we don't even know if it was really being played. A couple of days ago, I think, on Inside Xbox, they did a proper sit-down announcement and they did an actual live demo of it, or what appears to be a live demo, of someone playing Forza Horizon 4 on their mobile device. Now, the screen itself, the mobile phone, is kind of attached to the Xbox controller via a little clip lock, which you might be familiar with if you've ever used one of the MFI Bluetooth controllers for mobile. Some of them have little clip-on adapters. But they do indeed seem to be playing Forza Horizon 4, looking good, in real time, being pushed down the pipes. And that's exciting. To me, this is the step that we need, i.e. the addition of a controller makes all the difference, especially based on your experience, Rick.
I guess the main thing for me is how much data is that going to use to stream stuff? Like, if I'm just out and about using my 4G and think, oh, I'll play some Forza, like, how quickly am I going to run out of all my free data?
Yeah, because I assume it's going to be at least like it has to be like at least 720p, really.
Yeah, and if I can't use data and I'm having to use like public Wi-Fi and stuff like that, is any of the public Wi-Fi even going to be strong enough and fast enough to run any of that? Like, is this basically just, I'm going to play this in my home from my bed rather than playing it in my home at my TV?
Yeah.
Which is fine. Like, it opens up more options, I suppose. But it's just kind of like, unless they sort of sort that out and figure out how they're going to make it small enough to download quickly on crappy data, I don't know how useful it's going to be as like a properly mobile sort of experience. It's cool, though. I really like the look of it.
Yeah, it's probably going to take a few iterations before they properly nail, you know, everything, as you say, with the getting the 4G to work and frame rate and everything like that. So it's a cool concept, and I think when it's fully realised, it'll be amazing. But I think we're still a few years off it.
And we were a few years off it a few years ago, with the early trials of this stuff, because it really is like purely reliant here on their infrastructure at the other end being able to push the stuff out quickly and efficiently. And then, as you say, Rick, it's just internet connection. Like, if the internet connection's good, this will be a good experience. If it isn't, it'll be terrible. And that's just true with any streaming service. And that immediately imposes massive limitations on where you can play this. Because even in the video on Inside Xbox, the lassie doing the presentation is like, oh, I'll be, you know, I have subway journeys to take every day on the tube, and this is going to really help out. And I was like, you ain't going to be getting no 5 bars on the subway. Yeah. Even if you're using like Virgin open plan stuff where they do pipe Wi-Fi into the subway, it's almost certainly not going to be good enough to run this. And so if you're on a bus journey or any kind of journey which requires like an internet connection strong enough to run this, I feel like it's probably not going to work. You're going to have to be sitting in a good location in a prime spot, which is still great, as you say. You'd be able to play your console games on the go. That's fantastic. But I do think it's going to be a bit more restrictive than they're perhaps letting on.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they've worked out all the kinks yet, because they haven't even started public trials. They're starting that later this year, so I think that'll be quite telling.
Yeah, so we have to wait in order to actually get our hands on it, which we will do as soon as humanly possible, because the potential is great. I'll mention Octopath Traveler because this hits both Switch and mobile. So I think, wasn't there a prequel announced for Octopath Traveler a while back?
I think it was this week.
Was it this week? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Time is completely amorphous to me at this point. But also, they're going to be doing an iOS spin-off iOS and Android, I should say.
Yeah, so it's called Octopath Traveler Champions of the Continent.
This is only going to be running in Japan for a bit. There's a little teaser that's been released, and it looks pretty. I mean, to be fair, like, did anyone play Octopath Traveler, first question?
Yes. I did the review, I think.
I played the demo.
And it's the taking the 16-bit art style, but making it 3D.
Yeah, it's like 2.5D, that horrible, horrible phrase. Yeah, it's the 16-bit art style, so you've got flat characters and 2D sprites and all that sort of thing, but they're in a 3D world and they're running around and doing all that sort of stuff. And it's a fairly standard party-based JRPG, apart from the combat system has weird tweaks to it, and it's really, 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 really hard. Like, every single fight can kill you, and that's just tough.
And aren't the individual characters, because it's like 8 different characters, all of whom have their own narratives, but they're all sort of slightly siloed off from one another, is what I hear.
8 stories.
Yeah, they have 8 different stories and they all start in different locations. But as you go around the world, you sort of pick up the different characters and add them to your party. And then the game just kind of gently forgets that the other party members are there when they're not relevant to the story.
Right.
I think you'll agree, though, Rick, the art style is stunning.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. Especially the way they've handled the lighting and stuff. Like, it looks like a Super Nintendo game, but in HD, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a big bloomy filter over the top of it all. So they've got that kind of like glowy, lighty, like really overexposed bloom stuff on the middle of it. And then they do that chromatic aberration business whenever anyone gets hit, where, you know, you see like the RGB colors kind of flaring at the sides of the screen and stuff.
If you say so, none of those words mean a damn thing.
Video nerd stuff, sorry. They're doing chromatic aberration. Yeah, sorry. So the idea is it's going to be free to play. Apparently it is just a single player campaign on it with no multiplayer stuff. It's only available in Japan, but you can get in your request to join the testing until March 17th. Everyone else, I guess it's just a case of waiting till it comes over here. And given that we also got Octopath Traveler on Switch, I'm sure it should probably turn up. Matt, you had some information about Smash Bros, which I have no clue about because I don't play it or have a Switch to play it on. What's going on in that world?
Yeah, so there was a data mine earlier this week. People think it's going to be the version 3.0 update that's due to go live in April. So this update is going to bring in the new character, which is Persona 5's Joker. So I don't know how much you play Smash Bros, Rick.
A lot.
A lot, good. So then you know all the characters and everything. There's nearly 80 now, I think, off the top of my head. So the data mine basically had two file names, which had how to play Stage Builder and how to play Home Run, which suggests they're going to be bringing in the Home Run mode and the Stage Builder mode from previous Smash Bros. Iterations. So basically these have been fan requested for quite a while, and it's just good to see them coming in.
You mentioned a while back about that Joker thing appearing. Was it announced during one of the Nintendo Directs or something?
Joker was announced a few months ago, and then his release date is still being kept quiet.
Okay.
But it should be by the end of spring.
April, and I think that's been
narrowed down to April.
Gotcha. All right, then.
But yeah, Home Run sounds cool, because that's basically a mode where you have a sandbag, which is an item in the game, and you have to hit it to huge percents of damage just before. You've got 10 seconds to hit it as much as possible, and then you've got to pick up a Home Run bat and smash it out as far as you can.
Yeah.
I think that was added in Melee on the GameCube, and it's been a big favourite of people.
That's right, and the character's got eyes as well, which makes it even more...
Yes.
Hilarious.
Poor sandbag. The Stage Builder... I think that was in the one on Wii U, and that is literally you can create your own stages, which is cool, but I never really found any use for it, because I'm bad at building stuff.
Yeah, no, they introduced it in Smash Brothers Brawl back on the Wii, and then they brought it to the Wii U one as well. It's never been proper realized. I mean, the tools are fine, but there's not a lot you can do with it. I mean, I remember back on the Wii, me and my friends literally just created a box with a hole at the top, and we just called it Death Box, and literally would just, like, smash into each other until you got to, like, 900-odd% before flying through this little gap at the top of the stage. And it was just mental, it was. But I think the Wii U gamepad itself didn't really utilize it either, because Mario Maker, you know how easy that is to create stages with. It was never that easy with the Wii U version. So hopefully they've learned a few tricks from that now and can implement that properly on the Switch version.
Fingers crossed.
Oh, this sounds like fun Switch stuff.
Get a Switch.
Yeah, well, I don't need your Smash Brothers anyway.
Have you never tried it then, even?
I've probably tried it. Hang on. I've tried it on the GameCube. Yeah,
okay.
Like way back. But I never owned a GameCube. I've never owned a Switch. I never owned N64. I wasn't a Nintendo kid. The only thing I did pick up was a Game Boy Advance. And then the Wii and things like that. But no, I've never been a Smash person. I've never really been a fighter person. Like the entire fighting game genre, whether it's Virtual Fighter or Tekken or Street Fighter or whatever, none of that stuff really appealed to me as much. The only one that I ever got good at was Soul Blade. Not even Soul Calibur, you guys.
Soul Calibur.
Soul Blade. When it was out, the very first installment that ever appeared on certainly a Western console, was Soul Blade on the PS1.
Mm.
That's what I played. I really liked that. That was good. And that was when Soul Blade looked really good and had sort of 3D environments, and Tekken looked like Minecraft.
Don't diss Tekken.
I'm just saying, purely aesthetically, it did look like everyone was made out of Lego.
I will fight you on Tekken.
You'll win.
I'll win with my amazing games. Panda skills.
I will make you play Tekken on your PS4 remote system. And then I will crush
Deal.
You. Out and about this week, Pet Rescue Puzzle Saga is the newest thing from the King Stable. I'm doing it first because it's very quick and easy to cover. You haven't played this game, but you have played this game because it's a match 3 puzzler. It's not even that. It's a match 2 puzzler.
What?
They've completely flipped the paradigm, Rick. It's a whole new world.
How could they do this?
Well, this one is based more around like objectives beyond just get rid of all the blocks. So the reason it's called Pet Rescue is because the idea is, yes, you've got a whole bunch of blocks on the screen, and yes, you need to tap them to match them. There's no swiping and moving blocks around. It's just tapping any collection or cluster of like-coloured things. But there might be like a little dog in amongst all the blocks, and the idea is there might be like a kennel at the bottom of the screen, and you have to like tap to drop the dog gradually by removing all the blocks beneath it, so it works its way down the screen to the very bottom.
It's like the animals are trapped. It looks really cruel.
It is. It's quite harrowing. It's got that Sonic the Hedgehog thing where it's like you succeed at the game by like rescuing a bunch of birds out of a weird contraption. And it does the same thing. There are little eggs that appear around, and you need to like destroy the blocks that are near the eggs, and that will hatch the eggs. The birds will fly out and be free. And that's what it is. And it's a remix of any other match 3 puzzler that King has released, but now there's animals that you're saving in it. There's nothing that much to say about it. It's free to download, and you can get it if you want, but yeah. Now, other stuff people might have played. Rick, have you played anything this week?
Yes, I played Baba Is You on Switch.
Baba is me, you me.
Baba is you.
Okay.
Love is love. Water is push. Win is float.
Cool. Noun is noun. What's this then? Oh my god, this is so 8-bit.
It's amazing. So it's a puzzle game, and you have like the rules physically written into the world. So Baba is you means that you are playing as Baba, and usually like flag is win, wall is stop, all this kind of thing. And you sort of have to navigate these mazes and try and get to the thing. But you can change the rules. You can push the blocks of text around and alter what the rules actually are. So you've got wall is stop, but you can reach the wall is stop sentence. You can push stop out of the way, and suddenly you can now walk through walls. Like, it no longer does anything.
Yes, I see.
And then it gets further and further into it, so you end up with these huge chains of, like, water is water and float, Baba is melt, water is hot, skull is death, all this kind of nonsense.
Mm.
And you've got to try and, you know, just kind of, it's like a soccer band puzzle where you can only push things, and you've just got to kind of push the rules in such a way that you can win, whilst still staying in control of something. Like, if you ever disconnect the whatever is you, then you die instantly and you have to sort of rewind a bit.
Okay.
And you can rewind every single step that you take. So if you ever sort of mess up and push a block against the wall and you can no longer get it back, you can just rewind a few steps and make sure you don't push it in the right place and all that kind of stuff. It is so clever.
It reminds me of 7 Billion Humans.
Yes.
Where you've got the like two halves of the screen, and one side is all of the input commands that you have to input. In 7 Billion Humans, it's literally almost like code, and you're mixing around the commands, the go-to and the run and the refresh and the reset and walk forward, walk backwards, whatever, chaining it together so that when you press play and activate the code, all the little characters on the left side of the screen will do their thing and pick up the right boxes, move to the right place.
Mm.
Only this one, it's like your avatar can move from the map where the game is happening to the other side of the screen where the commands are and mess with both.
Yeah. And like you can, like, some of the solutions are just so weird and out there that it's like when it happens, you can kind of understand the logic because you are literally altering the logic as you go.
Yeah.
But also, like, you're just like, how did anyone, would anyone even think of that? But you just thought of that. It's like, this is incredible. And you feel so smart when you complete some of the levels. Like, it's just, the endorphin explosion that comes from it is like nothing else. It is truly spectacular.
It sounds like it hurts your brain to think about it.
It hurts so much. And it's like, I was playing it with my girlfriend and we were like arguing over solutions and it was just like, well, you know, you can do this, but do that and then push that there. And it's just, it's beautiful. It's magnificent. Anyone with a Switch should play it. Probably it's one of the best puzzle games I've ever played.
This is going to be a download only kind of thing. It's super like 8-bit to the extreme where it's just black background, like, you know, it looks like a Spectrum game or something.
Yeah, super simple graphics. The focus is on the gameplay. And that's where it should be.
And how much do you know? Do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head. I don't think it's any more than like £10-15. It is a fairly cheap game.
Good stuff. All right, then. So that is out right now. Baba Is You is the name of that one. And yeah, that's clearly well worth a look. Matt, have you been playing anything?
Yes, I've tried out Calamari Kid this week. It's an underwater arcade treasure hunter. So you're literally controlling this little squid. And how it works is it's got an interesting control setup. The squid is constantly circling, and whenever you touch the screen, he'll like break out of the circle and then go in the other direction. So if you think he's constantly going clockwise, as soon as you touch, he goes counterclockwise.
Okay.
So the aim is to navigate through coral reefs and avoid all deadly sea life and just get to the treasure at the bottom of the sea.
I can see it running now. I see what you mean. So you're having to kind of tap, tap, tap to keep it going in a straight line, because he's either just veering left, then veering right, then veering left.
That's right, yeah. So it's created by two guys from Melbourne, Sean O'Dowd and James Greenway, and it's fun, it's easy to pick up, but hard to master, if you see what I mean, because of the controls. It's really bright and colourful, which I love. There's quite a few ads, but I am playing the ad version, as you'd imagine, but it's more when they pop up during levels, which can be a bit annoying. But apart from that, I ain't got really any complaints. The music's interesting as well. It reminds me of something like the Chao Garden from Sonic Adventure. If you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think you know what I mean, Rick. You've played a lot of Sonic, haven't you? Yeah. I think it's $4.99 for the full game. And
if you unlock without the ads, you mean?
That's right, yeah, without the ads.
Okay, cool. Well, they can try it for free anyway. So Calamari Kid is the name of that one. So Block Drop-In Blitz is the name of this one. And this is a good idea that I don't feel has quite the execution that we're looking for. So it's a game that's kind of combining Tetris and colour matching. I don't know if anyone's had a look at this, but you get presented with two clusters of blocks. One at the top of the screen, it's a portrait game, and they're in, you know, two or three different colours all mixed up. At the bottom of the screen, there's another, like a table, a platform, where you can place blocks upon. And the idea is that you need to select four or more blocks from the cluster above of the same colour. And once you highlight four of them by just dragging over your finger, you release. And that shape that you've selected, say I've just gone 1, 2, 3, 4 and dragged my fingers around, so I've selected four in a square shape.
Mm.
That square will then immediately just drop straight down, bomb, into the bottom section, like it was falling from the top of the screen to the bottom in a game of Tetris. And then Tetris rules apply on the bottom half of the screen, i.e. you've got to kind of draw these shapes, which are four clusters of blocks, and then release, and then populate. And then if you create a line, a clear line across the way, it'll explode, and just like Tetris, and everything else will fall down to the bottom of the screen. That's a really nice idea, because you're effectively making your own tetrominoes from the shapes. And you can draw anything you want, provided there are four together, and that's basically the building blocks for all of the tetrominoes. I know that they all have names. I don't know them because that's weird. But I think that's a really novel idea. And when you do it and drop it, and you go, "That's really clever. Well done." Problem is, and I don't know if it's like deliberately getting too hard, or whether it's a one-off puzzle level, and I'm taking the wrong step on like the second go every time. But it's nigh on impossible from the very beginning. So you'll find four together, like, and go, okay, here's four, and I'll draw that in the L shape, bomb, it'll fall down, and then I'll find another four clustered together, and I'll draw that, brilliant. And then there's nothing. Then there's, like, no more blocks to work with. And you're like, oh, well, what am I supposed to do now? I've even had it where I will start a level and there are no groups of four colors together. And you can't do three, you can't do two, it has to be four. So it's like, well, this is just broken, isn't it? Which is a real shame, because I really like the idea, like the conceit when it explained it, and I did it for the first time, and it drops down, you're like, oh, this is really smart. Like having to build your own Tetromino blocks and create your own game of Tetris where you're doing the dropping and doing the arranging at the bottom. And you can't move the blocks as they're falling. Wherever you draw them at the top of the screen, they fall straight down. So you have to bear that in mind when you're drawing the blocks. Like, if I draw this here, it's going to fall straight down. I need it to slot in to the existing pattern I've got on the lower half of the screen. All that stuff, that's a great idea. But I can't... I think it's broken. I really do. I've played it, like, numerous times, so I'm like, no, maybe I'm just rubbish. I can't be failing, like, level one or level two. And no, it's... I've booted it up. Like, I've booted it up right now, and I'm looking at a screen, and there are no four blocks whatsoever. And it's not like there's loads. It's not like a bejeweled screen where there's hundreds of them. We're talking like a grid where it's like five across and five down. That's it. And there's no four blocks available. So, good idea. Maybe release it when it's working. would be my advice on that one. Perhaps an update. But Block Dropping Blitz is the name of that one. I should mention this. Battlefleet Ground Assault. This is iPad only. Has anyone had a go?
No, I'm going to.
Right.
But I haven't taken a look yet.
Yeah, so, I ain't got a chance either.
This is heavy going. This falls into the simmy side of the World War II strategy games, where they are appealing to people who, like, know about World War II and are massively into it. This isn't kind of a fun Sky Gamblers, you know, arcadey, taking extraordinary amounts of artistic license with historical events. I think they're trying to recreate it properly. So you've got a big map and you've got the entire, like, Axis campaign spat out over a European map. And you have to fight through different battles. And it's fully turn-based. You get pushed down onto a battlefield where there's, like, you know, you've got artillery, you've got tanks. It's mainly a tank game. And you're taking it in turns to control each individual member of your little armed force. So you'll maybe work your way through movements for 12 or 13 different units and telling them what to do each time. And then once you've done all that, it's turnover, the enemy does their thing, and then you go backwards and forwards. This feels not brilliantly optimized for mobile, to the point where they're still telling me to use WASD in the instructions. So maybe a bit of optimization required still. It's very dry. It's not explaining itself particularly well. It's not very good looking. But I say that with the caveat that I think maybe it's trying to scratch a particular itch that I don't have, which is it's going for that, like, serious, you know, taking control of everything, very, very slow. It's not about the looks, it's about the tactics, that kind of thing.
I'm going to hate this, and I have to play this later.
Do you?
God damn it.
I only played it for like 20, 25 minutes, which is nowhere near enough really to get a feel for something of this scale. But even from just playing it a bit, like, I don't think it's the most polished thing, and I think the onboarding is bad. So enjoy yourself, Rick. Also,
thank you.
It's got a really high price tag, isn't it?
Yeah, it's $15, I think, £15.
Oof.
Which is a lot for anything on mobile, but I guess because it's, like, so focused on its audience, the people who want to play this game will probably happily pay that.
Yeah, these tend to be some of the more expensive, along with the likes of Square Enix and stuff, and when you're buying old Final Fantasy games. The extremely niche battle sim games, they're often around 10 quid, 15 quid, because say it's a very specific audience of dedicated people who are right into this stuff. So maybe, viewed through those eyes, this is great, but I'm not really feeling it myself, to be honest. Battlefleet Ground Assault is the name of that one. Matt, have you had a go on anything else this week?
I just wanted to give a brief shout out to Framed. So I'm very late to the party on this one, but yeah, I've been playing that this week. It's from Love Shack, and it's amazing. I know it's won loads of awards, and it's been heralded as one of the best puzzlers on mobile, but yeah, I love it. It's basically all the montages from Catch Me If You Can turned into like a puzzle game. It's stellar, and the music soundtrack is amazing. It's like a sophisticated spy soundtrack that just accompanies it. If you haven't tried this out, you absolutely should.
What turned you onto it? Why are you playing it now?
There was a news story. I can't remember what it was exactly. I think it was something to do with Love Shack themselves. I know Framed, it's got a sequel, and I think they've both come to Switch.
That was a few months ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was one of our big favourites from 2016, maybe? 2015? I don't know.
2014, I think it came out.
Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yes, I second that. It's obviously splendid. We've got reviews of both games. They both got reviewed really well, and video reviews as well over on PG's YouTube. So do check them out, and entirely worth everyone's time. Rick, have you had a chance to play anything else, or have you just been, you know, putting out fires?
Oh, just basking in the glory of being in my last week, to be honest.
Fully checked out. I that. Fantastic.
I've been sat in front of the TV, feet up, laptop to my side. Oh, I guess something's happening. No. I played a bit of Rico, which I think is the other really interesting game on Switch. Not a lot of big games on Switch this week, but some really great indie ones. Mm. And Rico is from Ground Shatter, who did Sky Runners?
Gambler. No, Sky...
Racers?
Damn. I do know this. But yeah, it's one of those... It was a 2D platformer with four players in it. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is completely different. This is a co-op first-person shooter. You can play it by yourself if you want. And it's like a roguelike FPS about kicking in doors and shooting people in the face. And that is literally the entire game. Walk up to a door. If you're playing in co-op, your co-op partner can go to another door, kick the door open, you instantly go into slow-mo for a brief part of time, you shoot everybody you can see, and then it goes, room cleared, and you move on to the next room. And that is the whole game. It randomly generates level when you load it in, and it's fantastic.
Those set pieces that you get in Call of Duty games, where everything goes slow-mo for a few seconds.
Exactly. It's like those, except they're happening every minute. Like, every single door you kick open, it goes into slow-mo. There is not, like, if you're playing the game properly, there is not a minute where you have not entered slow-mo at some point.
Permanent bullet time. All right, so I guess the question is, A, is that fun, and B, does that get old?
It doesn't get old. So it kind of reminds me of, does anybody remember Wet on
360 PS3? I do, yes, the knee-sliding game.
that one where, like, every single time you did a move, it went into slow motion. Mm. And I personally loved Wet more than probably any other game on that generation. Like, I thought it was one of the best games ever, mostly because it's always in slow-mo. So this is very much a continuation of that sort of feel, where it's just, slow-mo is always fun, but it's not lasting long enough that you get bored of, like, you're thinking, oh, I need to move on now, I need to get on to the next thing, it's taking too long, I just wish it would speed up. It is these, like, constant short, brief bursts of slow motion, super cool action, bullets flying everywhere, and then it all comes back to the norm, and if you've still got enemies to kill, you've got to shoot them in real time, and you'll take a bit more damage and that kind of thing. It's actually really good fun. You start off with a basic pistol, and then once you complete objectives, you can start buying new weapons, but they're sort of randomly assigned which weapons you can buy at the end of each level, so you don't know what gun you're going to get and what your loadout's going to be until you've completed this level and move on to the next. I can imagine it might get a bit boring after, like, 10 hours or something. Like, if you just sat there and continuously killed and shot people for ages, that would probably get kind of dull. And the roguelike elements of randomly generated maps and permadeath and that kind of thing will make it more interesting.
Sure.
Is there a story to it?
No. There is no story. You are a cop. You shoot people. That is the story.
Just kicking ass and taking names.
Pretty much. So, like, there are three modes. There's the sort of quick play mode where you just load up a level and go. There's a case mode where it kind of has like an FTL style map where you got to reach the end of the map and you go through various nodes, and the nodes represent different levels of difficulty and if you're shooting at lieutenants of the crime gang or whatever. But that whole thing is all entirely randomly generated. And then they have their own daily quests. So each day there'll be a new quest that I think has been tailored for that day or something. And then there's like leaderboards on that and that kind of thing. And as I say, you can play the whole thing in co-op as well, which is kind of fun. And yeah, it's just good, silly fun and a really good shooter, which I think the Switch needs a lot more of. And this is a step in the right direction on that front.
Mm. Nice. All right. Well, you can go and have a look at that right now. There's only a couple of other things on mobile really of interest. Rose's Garden is one of them, which is this incredibly zen, like very, I guess like a painterly, like an illustration in a children's book, but done with watercolors or something. And the idea is that you are growing flowers. You are taking care and tending to this flower bed that you have.
I believe all the flowers are named after important women throughout history.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Well, so I've only played the beginning of it just to get like the feel for it, so I haven't dug in. But it's a very painterly, very nice-looking thing, but I need to play more of it to have an opinion whether it's fun or not. But that's $2.99. Rose's Garden's the name of that. I'm sure we'll be taking a look at it in more detail on PG. Plus, Wonder Park Magic Rides, which is... I immediately didn't like this. Instantly. Because it just turned on, and it's like, it's one of those... Tapathon games like, you know, Simpsons Tapped Out or Family Guy or whatever, only it's a theme park and you're resurrecting this theme park which has been out of commission or something, and then you're building more stuff and you build a tent and a big blue bear appears and he's the big blue bear who's going to entice people into the theme park, and then you have to deal with the rides and all that. And it's that game just skinned with a theme park, and it seems very, very geared towards children. And it just all feels a bit icky and blah, and I don't like it.
Cool.
Well, Wonder Park Magic Rides is the name of that one. Go give it a look. That's probably it for the week. But Rick.
Yo.
This is it.
This is it.
The time.
This is the last time we will ever say goodbye on this podcast.
Do you have any fond memories? Is there anything that you got to do while you were here, like over the like past 3 years, where you're like, actually, that was quite cool, whether it's reviews or trips or things?
I mean, I guess the last year has been full of really interesting trips. Like, I got to go to Nintendo's headquarters and play loads of games at preview. So I got my hands on the Labo before anybody else, which is really interesting.
That's cool.
I've flown around the world. I've been to San Francisco to go to GDC last year. I went to Dubai to go play or see people playing PUBG at the PUBG finals on PUBG Mobile. I've been to King's headquarters in Sweden, which is fascinating.
Just showing off now.
Well, those are my fondest memories. You know, I've got to do a lot of really cool stuff with this job. I've got to play a lot of really cool games. I've got to chat to developers who are really fascinated by the things that they are making. And that's always really nice, is to have these conversations with developers. I've got a preview going up today. Probably one of my last big pieces of my gaming career so far is a preview of Snooker 19. And it's not exactly the most exciting game, but just listening to the studio head talking about all the different ways they've gone super into detail on making Snooker 19, I sat there the whole time with a huge smile on my face. It's like, this is a man who loves what he's doing. And when you meet developers like that and they just talk and talk and talk, and they have just got all this extra information that they are so desperate to share with you because they love what they're doing so much, there is no other feeling as wonderful as that. Being there and sharing this experience with the developers as they try and say, look, I love this and I want everybody else in the world to love this too. And it's like, that's really powerful, I think.
It's easy to be cynical, I think, when you see the big companies, everyone rolls their eyes when, you know, Don Matrick rolls out or back in the day, or, you know, we were talking about Reggie stepping down from Nintendo and the way that Nintendo are able to put smiley, warm faces on their corporate brand. But a lot of it does get lost in kind of corporate speak.
Yeah.
But when you just go down to, oh, you know, here's the art department guy or one of the dudes, one of the animators or something, and you see, A, the raw talent behind it all, and B, as you say, just the passion and the excitement of, hey, I made this character make this funny expression with his eye, and this is how I did it, and goes into 20 minutes of exhaustive detail, and you're like, you properly care about this.
Yeah.
And that passion ends up coming out in a lot of the games that we play, and these things are little expressive. We're not going to do the art debate, but it is art, obviously. And it's people who find a vehicle through which they can express themselves, and then we end up having an entertaining product at the end of it, hopefully, but it's made up of all these individual people's passions. And is there any good mobile games that you're still playing, for example, or Switch stuff that you're like, this is the bomb?
Egg Inc. I know I've talked about it before.
Oh, yeah. Still on that.
That actually came out during my tenure. Brilliant game. Everyone should play it.
Mm. What's Egg Inc. then?
You don't know what Egg Inc. is?
No.
Ah. you Right. It's an idle game, and you tap a button, and an egg comes running... No, a chicken comes running out of a coop.
What came first?
So easy to get those things.
A chicken comes running out, it goes into a coop, and then you press the button again, and another chicken, and then you just keep tapping the button, and then there's suddenly a swarm of chickens, and then your coops are too full, so you have to upgrade your coops, and then you get different eggs, and you just keep upgrading this farm, and it is wonderful, it's cheery, it's very simple, you will lose 6 months of your life to it. I have ruined lives by telling people about this game.
That's the real reason you're leaving.
Get out before the lawsuits start coming in. A girl once sat across from me at a bar and was like, 6 months ago you told me to play this game, and I have not stopped playing it since. All over Christmas break, that's all I was doing. I was at the dinner table at Christmas playing this stupid game, and it's all your fault. And I was like, yes, that is my dream achieved.
Vanish in a puff of smoke.
Exactly.
Good work. All right, then. Well, if anyone takes anything away from this show, it's go and play Egg with how many G's? Five? Four, five?
No, it's not egg.
Isn't it?
It's just regular egg.
Just regular egg.
Two G's, comma, INC.
Oh,
egg
okay.
Incorporated.
Egging.
That doesn't sound as good now without the G's.
No, I've never played egg. Okay. Mostly because that looks horrible and gross.
That was a big indie pitch winner. That did quite well.
Oh, did it?
Yeah,
I mean,
but that's
I'm sure it's a great game, but I don't like vomit, so...
Sorry, you don't have to toe the line anymore. You're free.
All mobile games are horrible. Everyone who makes them is an idiot. And yeah, we're good.
Finally,
the truth is out. Burn the last few bridges.
Drop that mic. Well, it's been real, dude. We will massively miss you. And I'm sure everybody listening will as well. Matt, obviously, you've stepped in last week and you'll be joining us much more in future. So we're obviously very pleased to have you, the young blood, all coming in, Rick. Replacing your weathered old ass.
I'm the same age as Rick, unfortunately. So.
Damn.
Yeah, but you've still got the young enthusiasm of somebody who... A mewling babe in the mobile gaming world.
Give it 3 years.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And you'll be poisoning people's lives with idle games and laughing.
You'll be getting mentioned in lawsuits because of your terrible writing that just glosses over ideas. People then use it to try and sue people.
Oh, yeah. That was a highlight as well.
Yeah, those are the good times.
Stopping games coming out. Yeah. Check back to old podcasts for that story.
Yeah, no, wish you all the best, Rick. And obviously, big shoes to fill, and I'll do my best. But yeah, good luck with everything.
Thank you. It's been fun.
So I guess with that, we'll knock it on the head for this week. Thank you all for listening and joining us. Thank you for joining us, Rick. And I mean that broadly for the past 3 years. Thank you for joining us. It's been fantastic.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us, Matt. We'll see you next week or whenever it might be. Might not be next week because I am, speaking of GDC, at GDC next week. So I think I should be back on like Friday afternoon, but you know, planes. So we'll see how that goes. But certainly the week after, we'll definitely be back for more stuff. So Matt, see you then.
See you then.
Splendid. All right. And everybody else listening, thank you again. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.